Welcome everyone to Satsang. And I always like to begin by remembering my guru Swami Muktananda, who always began his programs by saying in Hindi, Sabko bare sanmane ke sat prem se hriday swagat, which means with great respect and love I welcome you all with all my heart. And he never tired of saying that the essence of spirituality is to welcome another person with love. And so, in that spirit, I want to welcome you to Satsang. And also welcome everybody watching in the global Satsang. So, welcome everybody to the program tonight. And tonight, one of my favorite programs. Let's see. Let's not put anything up yet. But if someone were to ask me, is yoga and sadhana mainly, we can put that up, She's in show business, so she likes dim lights with a spotlight. I told you that before, around Baba we used to joke that the swamis were either ex-actors or ex-teachers, academics, and the actors liked spotlight, mood lighting and spotlights. And the academics liked full light everywhere. So you can ask, you can figure out what I was. But I would have been a good actor. To die, perchance to dream. Never mind. Anyway, so I would say about yoga being a property of India, I'd say, of course, India, they had tremendous understanding, and they developed the art of yoga and inquiry to a very high degree. But if you would ask me, are there glimmerings of yogic understanding, yogic vision in the West? And I'd say, of course they were, and indeed they were. Yoga sadhana, sadhana's spiritual practice, hides out in many forms in the Western tradition. My favorite form is in the tradition of Stoic philosophy, Greek and Roman Stoic philosophy. Now, Stoicism begins with Zeno in the early 3rd century BC. This is a couple of centuries after the Buddha and before Jesus, of course. Do we have a picture of Zeno? This is a recent photograph. Now, you shouldn't mistake Zeno for the confused. Often you might confuse him with Zeno of Elea, but this is, he's a disciple of Crates the Cynic. So in those days, cynics could have disciples. So this is Zeno of Citium. And later Stoics include my favorite Western yogi, Epictetus, from about, is that a photograph or an artist's impression? Recent photograph. That's from the 1st century AD. And also a very interesting figure, Marcus Aurelius, who was the emperor. He was also a great philosopher. That's very good, isn't it? So, okay. To put Stoic philosophy in a nutshell, it includes, now, it's interesting, they often call it moral philosophy. And, you know, I don't think Western philosophic scholars don't have context in which to put it. So they call it moral philosophy, which makes you think these people sat around saying, that's good, that's bad, that's good, that's bad. But yogic philosophy couldn't be further from that, because they have a different notion of what's good and bad. Yogis say that which brings you closer to the self, closer to God, closer to higher consciousness is good. And anything that takes you away from it is bad. It's not a moralistic, it's a yogic point of view. So they don't know what, and they call it moral philosophy, but it's really, when you've done practice in yoga, you understand it's actually a yogic, and you'll hear. So to put it in a nutshell, it includes being free of negative emotion, like anger, envy, jealousy, worry, and fear, and depression, and thus to remain in the present moment, not swept away by negative emotions or negative thinking. Stoicism says we should turn our will over to nature and to reality. And another, that is to surrender to what they would call universal reason, which means you don't create blocks by resistance. You go with the flow in modern parlance. If you can live in the flow, your life goes much better. But because of our fears, our attachments, our misunderstandings, we're always causing resistance, and then we burn and fry in that resistance. So Stoicism says if we make this surrender properly, we achieve happiness. Now that's the goal. See, the goal of Stoicism is happiness or balance or peace, which is a yogic goal. It's not about becoming a moral person. It's about becoming a happy, fulfilled person. So if we put it in an even smaller nutshell, Stoicism is nothing but a form of yoga in which we practice and we train and we work on ourselves and live a yogic way of life leading to happiness. We make certain insights. We discover when our mind gets negative, leads to misery and unhappiness. And so we work against that. And for me, yoga is always relevant to our present life and our present state of wisdom and our present state of well-being. So my approach is not to give you a historical summary of Stoicism, but to think of the great Stoics as great beings. And the great beings' teachings are relevant. Sometimes we have to translate them a little bit, but they're relevant here and now to the way we live, and they can be applied, their wisdom can be applied. So I'm going to give you some of the teachings from Epictetus and Marcus Aurelius. Why don't we start with Marcus Aurelius, a few from him, and then back to my favorite, Epictetus. Marcus Aurelius. Do you want to show him again? You got another picture of him or the same one? Same one? Oh, show it. Okay. So he lived from about 120 to about 180 AD. He was the Roman emperor the last 20 years of his life. And he's really the last great Stoic writer of antiquity, although Stoicism's quite in vogue now. If you look, you'll find that there are people who practice it and talk about it now. He wrote a book called Meditations, 12 books of private reflections on life, death, conduct, and the cosmos. So he would go, and go back to his room and he'd write a paragraph about what he thought that day. Kind of like Donald Trump does. He's, this profound collections, and those were his tweets.
His tweet.
Now, the ideal in Plato was of the philosopher king. You know, it's a wonderful image that the person who rules you should also be wise. There's usually often a bifurcation between power and compassion and love and intelligence, no more than we might see these days, But Plato held the ideal of the philosopher king. He said, when kings become philosophers and philosophers become kings, then we'll have, I guess, essentially heaven on earth. And so for a while there with Marcus Aurelius, he wielded power and he also practiced his philosophy. Okay. Oh, is that him?
Yeah.
Another view. Very good. I wonder if did they get perms then, or are they, are they naturally curly? All right. let us not ask such questions. All right, here are a few quotes from Marcus Aurelius. He says, this is the emperor, he says, bear in mind that a person's worth is measured by the worth of what he values. Oh, that should get you thinking, what do I value? Ah, footy! Now, what do you really, if you think deeply about what your real values are, it shows you who you are, really. That's a great one, but let's not dwell on that. Let's go on. There's another one that's a little longer. He asks, is my mind sufficient for this task, or is it not? So a job is there. Am I adequate to it? Can I do it? If it is, I use it for the task as an instrument given me by the nature of the whole. The whole, capital W-H-O-L-E, means, so God or nature or Shakti or spirit has given me this instrument, the mind, to solve this problem, whatever it is. And so I regard it as an instrument given to me by some higher power to do what I do. Then he says, if it is not adequate, I either cede the work, if it is otherwise my responsibility, to someone better able to accomplish it. Now, how often do you say, well, I can't really do this, we'll get that person. We do that all the time, actually. I mean, you don't try to do your plumbing and your electricity yourself, do you? You give that work over to an expert in the field. But sometimes it takes a little humility to say, you know, I need to bring in somebody who understands this better. Or do it as best I can, calling in aid, someone who, in cooperation with my own directing mind, can achieve what is at this particular time the need and benefit. What is at this particular time the need and benefit of the community? So that's interesting also. He's saying that we have in mind not our personal gains, but what's good for the whole. And as the emperor, he would have to think in terms of the whole. And so we do what's good for everything and for everyone. Whatever I do, either by myself or with another, should have this sole focus, the common benefit and harmony. Higher purpose. So if we live always for higher purpose, it's a wonderful thing. Of course, the highest purpose is to live for the highest truth, the self, the Shakti. Okay, another one. This is a completely different thing, philosophical thing about oneness. He says, all things are meshed together and a sacred bond unites them. All things are interconnected. This is the vision of mysticism. Whenever a mystic experience happens, and some of you, many of you have had mystic experience, is that right? Just wiggle your left eyebrow if you... And so, and in that mystic experience, it's marked by a sense of oneness, isn't it? A sense of interrelated, interconnection of all things. He says, hardly a single thing is alien to the rest. Ordered together in their places, they together make up the one order of the universe. So everything in its own place, but all together they make up the universe. There is one universe out of all things, one God pervading all things, one substance, one law, one common reason in all intelligent beings, and one truth. If indeed there is also one perfection of all cognate beings sharing in the same reason, the nous, Kashmir Shaivism says the same thing, that there's one consciousness that underlies the whole universe, and everything participates in that one consciousness. When I was in graduate school, they talked about the great chain of being. It comes from Plato, probably, that there's a chain of being that involves everything in the universe, from the highest, which would be God, then you have the angels, then you have the Americans. you have, so then you have, you know, human beings, And you have the animal kingdom, and then you know, so on, all the way down to
Donald Trump.
Sri Ra. So what?
Donald Trump,
yeah. But that's called the great chain of being, and every niche is filled, every part of that. And, you know, Shaivism says exactly the same thing. Shaivism says there's one consciousness, but it vibrates at different levels. So what we call God is the oneness, the vibration of total oneness and joy and wisdom and light and love. And then it steps down while still retaining its original form. It also steps down and becomes human beings and all the way down to the rocks, like that. So that's very interesting that Marcus Aurelius looks at it that way. And here's the final one from him. Also interesting. He says, the soul is a sphere which retains the integrity of its own form if it does not bulge or contract for anything, does not flare or subside, but keeps the constant light by which it sees the truth of all things and the truth in itself. This is a marvelous statement. Shall I pick it apart?
Yeah.
Okay, so we could say the soul or the self or even the mind, however you want to talk about it. If it's not expanded or contracted, bulge or contract for anything, if it's not lost in a false expansion or a false contraction like I'm no good, I'm worthless, I'm miserable, or a false expansion like I'm better than everyone, blah, blah, blah. If it's not lost, that, if it just stays in its own proper shape, which is round, isn't it? A sphere. And it does not flare or subside, it stays in its real space and keeps the constant light by which it sees the truth, so that in its own space, its own proper space of peace, it can see the truth. If it expands or contracts, it loses the truth. And this is Bhagavan Nityananda's teaching of Bhavana Rakho. If we keep in a state of balance, a state of openness, state of joy, we can understand things much better than if we get contracted, self-hating, or we get terribly expanded. If we can keep ourselves in that middle space, then our life goes much better. So that's a very profound insight by Marcus Aurelius. So, there's Marcus. You like that? Okay, so now we can look at some Epictetus, who's my favorite classical dude. So his first thing is he distinguishes between things, and this is really practical, things that are within our control and not in our control. And he says, if something's in your control, then go for it. Do the best you can. Put your whole effort in dealing with it. But if it's not in your control, forget it. It has nothing to do with you. And very often we don't do that. Give your best if you can do something about it. If you can't, then, well, one thing you could do is pray to a higher power. Of course, you can't do it, so refer it upwards. But certainly worrying about it or straining where you can't do anything is useless. So a Stoic would say, don't worry about it. How much do we worry about things we can't control? How much? Twitch your right eyebrow if you ever do that. All right, never mind. So that's what he says. He says, now he says, what's in our power? He says, in our power are our opinions, our impulses, our desires, and our aversions. Now let me ask you, where do those things exist? In the inner world, they're all inside. So he says, we have the power over our inner world. What's not in our power? He says, our bodies, our possessions, our glory, and power over external things. So basically, Within a world, we have dominion. The outer world, not so much. We have some, but not so much. So the place to begin is with our inner world. Free yourself in your inner world, and then you can live a happy and productive life. So obviously, perfect yoga. He was, by the way, he was born a slave. But at a young age, he was, and he was also lame or crippled. But around 70 AD, he obtained his freedom, and then he was drawn to Stoic philosophy and became, he headed a school of philosophy. He didn't leave any writings, like Socrates. Socrates didn't leave any writings, except some inferior novels that were later published in syndicate, but that's a joke, sorry. I was just looking, this is so serious philosophy, you know. Where was I? So he didn't write anything. You know, Plato, we all know about Socrates through Plato, because Plato wrote a lot. So he had a disciple named Arian who wrote down everything he said. What else do I want to say? Yeah. So the first object of philosophy, he says, is to purify your own mind. And the mind alone is our power and in our power. Hence, we should control the mind. And this is a wonderful thing. He says, say to every impression, every thought, feeling that comes in, say, you are an impression and not at all the thing you appear to be. And isn't that one? It means this is a thought. It's not the reality. And so I don't have to think it. We don't realize that we have choice over what we think. We can have choice. We don't, now, at the beginning we don't have choice because we're like machines. We just wound up and we think all these thoughts that we've been programmed. But as we meditate and as we understand ourselves, we gain control. Then we decide, here's a thought, okay? Here's a thought, I perceive that it makes me feel miserable, right? Do you know this situation? Now, should I think it or not?
It's fake news.
What?
It's fake news.
Fake news, yeah. That's right. You get a lot of fake news. So you can choose what you want to think about, you know. And you know immediately by the feedback within whether it's appropriate to think about that. So that's what he says. So cultivate the mind to wish for nothing but what God wills. If we do, then we'll be truly free. And try to act in harmony with the old. Sounds like Taoist there. Try to act in harmony instead of creating. He says, the Stoic sage will never find life intolerable and will complain about no one, neither deity nor human. But of course, if he knew the people I know, he'd complain. Right? The ones you know. It's okay. You know a lot of people you can complain about. Don't worry about it. And he says, those who go wrong, we should pardon and treat with compassion, since whatever they did from ignorance, which is very yogic. It really struck me when I saw the yogic point of view. It was not sin, but ignorance, which is a whole different thing. And as we gain in wisdom and knowledge, we overcome that. And then what else do you say? All right, a few from Epictetus, okay? Some of these I repeat from... this is my yearly Epictetus fest, by the way. Once a year, I figure. I love him too much, I might do him all the time, if not so. Here are a couple that I've never used before. This sounds like the landmark form. First say to yourself what you would be, then do what you have to do. All right? Make a clear decision. Clear decision, what do I want to be? Second, first question, is it attainable? And is it good? Then go like hell for it. Do it. He says, a person should so live that his happiness shall depend as little as possible on external things. See, if we depend on externals, we're going up and down all through the day. That's good, that's bad, that's good. We expand and contract. I love this one. Even as the sun does not wait for prayers and incantations to rise, but shines forth and is welcomed by all, so also you should not wait for the clapping of hands and shouts and praise to do your duty. Nay, do good of your own accord, and you'll be loved like the sun. So don't sit pouting in your room saying, well, if they want me to do that, they got to say, yeah. No, just do your thing with graciousness and with generosity. And that's what the sun does. It just doesn't say, you know, all over India they do aarti when the sun comes up, blah, blah, blah. The sun doesn't come up because of that. The sun just comes up. Another one. This is similar to what I've been saying. I must die. Must I then die lamenting? I do have to die, but I don't have to weep about it. I must be put in chains. Must I then also lament? I guess he was arrested. I must go into exile. Does any man then hinder me from going with smiles and cheerfulness and contentment? Again, it's that whole thing about having the choice of the way you react to things. You know, these things might happen because of your destiny, your karma, or who knows, but then to react to them well is a great thing. He says, let me see. This one I did a while ago, but I like it a lot. He says, starting with things of little value, a bit of spilled oil, a little stolen wine, repeat to yourself, for such a small price I buy tranquility. You know what that anybody's saying there? He's saying, get over it. Whatever it is, you start with small things. You spill a little bit of oil on your shirt, you could spend the next week freaking out about it. But he says, but you don't do it, and you say to yourself, just for that small thing, I buy tranquility. A little bit of oil on my shirt, and I can be free. A little stolen wine, somebody stole a bottle of my wine. So it doesn't matter. And then you work up to big things, and you maintain your tranquility. He says, men are disturbed not by things, but by the principles and notions which they form concerning things. That's the real insight that a yogi has, that it's not what happens, it's how we react. That's the key. Don't seek to have events happen as you wish, but wish the things which happen to be as they are, and you'll have a tranquil flow of life. That's a good one, isn't it? We'll do that in a second. He says, going with this a corollary, as you say, wherever a man is against his will, that to him is a prison. So wherever we, you know how you bring a kid somewhere he doesn't want to go? It's like, nah. But we're like that in our life. There's a lot of stuff, you know, so he says, wish it the way it is. This is a dharana. We can contemplate that. So I want you inside, go in, and just for the sake of this experiment, okay? You don't have to actually have this attitude. By the way, it's very warm in here, isn't it? Yeah, who can turn down the heat? Does anybody know how to do it? Turn it down, it's boiling. It's better to boil than freeze, isn't it? Yeah. How many think it's better to boil than freeze? How many think it's better to freeze than boil? It's better to do. This soup is too hot, said the Papa Bear. Is that what? Yeah. All right. So here's what I want you to do. I want you to Just take the attitude now. I don't want you to seriously have this attitude. But just for the sake of this, and see what it feels like, my life is totally perfect, exactly as it is. Exactly as it is. Go in and view your life and just take that attitude. My life is perfect as it is. Okay. Be able to do that? Mm-hmm. To some extent, to part extent? Did a voice go, but? Mm-hmm. Did it have a good feeling? Mm-hmm. That's some interesting evidence, if it had a good feeling. We can think about that. Want a few more? I've got quite a few more here. Let me see. So this is his main one here. There's only one way to happiness, and that is to cease worrying about things which are beyond the power of our will. I think it tells something about how he was also. This is like a realization that he must have had. He saw that he was a worrier, and that he worried about all kinds of things, which might come out that way or not come out that way, but they were not in his hands. And so, and he realized it's just total waste of himself and of his life force to have those worries. So, and here's one. This one is the, where is that? I want to find the message for the, this is my New Year's message. So I'll do it again. He says, everything has two handles, the one by which it may be carried, the other by which it cannot. Now, what he means there is everything has two ways to look at it. And by way of being carried means one way to look at it is uplifting and peaceful. The other way to look at it makes you miserable. You see that? He says, if your brother acts unjustly, don't lay hold on the action by the handle of his injustice, for by that it cannot be carried, but by the opposite, that he is your brother, that he was brought up with you, and thus you will lay hold on it as it is to be carried. So he's saying, find a way of looking at things that is uplifting and positive, rather than you're not committed to looking at things in a negative way. There's always a positive aspect to it. So find the right handle. That is real freedom if you can do that. That's real choice if you can do that. And there's another one. In theory, there's nothing to hinder our following what we are taught. In other words, there's nothing to hinder uplifting ourselves all the time. But in life, there are many things to draw us aside. Here's one thing. You know, Bobby used to say that the tests always come. And what that means is you can attain a good inner state, a samadhi, or a place of love. You can be sure that within minutes or hours, it will be tested. Something will happen. Some irritating person will come up to you and try to bring you down, make your life miserable. That's inevitable. You know, why is that? Is that is that God's wickedness or the universe? No, it's a way of establishing us so strong that nothing can shake us off our seat. And so that we can put up with these things and soon and become, as he would say, like Socrates, which I'll read that one now. I love this also. He says, resolve to live as a grown-up who is making progress. What is that now? I am a grown-up making progress. That means I'm a yogi. I'm practicing yoga. I'm doing inner work. I'm working on myself, right? Isn't that what it means? And make whatever you think best a law that you never set aside. In other words, live for the highest principle. He says, and whenever you encounter anything that is difficult or pleasurable, or highly or lowly regarded, remember that the contest is now. You are at the Olympic Games. You cannot wait any longer, and that your progress is wrecked or preserved by a single day and a single event. So the chips are on the table. It's the grand final. Everything depends on this. This is it. You're living so passionately that every moment is the massive choice of your life. You're on fire with life. No, it's good. He says, this is how Socrates fulfilled himself, by attending to nothing except reason in everything he encountered. So he was uncompromisingly reasonable, but it doesn't mean that. It means he always took the high road. He always kept his peace. He always saw philosophically there was nothing to be upset about. And you, although you're not yet a Socrates, translate for us a great being, Socrates, a great being, not yet a siddha or a realized yogi, should live as someone who at least wants to be a Socrates. We should have little t-shirts. I want to be a Socrates. Yes? Means can we be the best version of ourselves that we can be? And do you want to realize that? It's not realizing something else, some enlightenment or something external. It's you want to realize the best version of you that you can be. Now, what would that best version of you be? It would be a you that is full of love, that is generous spirited, not selfish, not grasping, but loving and open and sweet. That's who you'd be, right? You know that one in you? It's in there, but it doesn't always come out, does it? Some other person emerges, the bitch. The mother keeps coming out. You know, so the commitment of a yogi is to realize that perfect you that you are, every one of us in its own way. And it's a great goal, and it's not easy, but it's the only thing really worth living for, truly speaking, if I can editorialize. And who will stop me? No, don't try. I give up. I love this one, too. He says, and this reminds me of Baba, because Baba used to say, a siddha turns everything to his own advantage, which means that he found a way to look at whatever is happening positively. So this is a really good example. When alone, call it peace and liberty, and consider yourself the God's equal. When in a crowd, think of yourself as a guest at an enormous party and celebrate the best you can. That's a wonderful statement, saying, so when you're alone, a lot of people complain, oh, I'm so lonely. When you're in a crowd, you think, oh, I'm so bothered by all these people and all their trips, you know, and this is the way we live our life. So he says, instead, when you're alone, value it. You're the God, you're in your own space. You know how it is coming back to your own space. So think of it that way. And don't pine for company, just be there. Because company will come. And when you're in company, don't think, how can I get out of here? I hate these people. Think, I'm a guest at an enormous party. And celebrate. Is that cool or what? That's real insightful. What else? Two more, okay? He says, when you close the doors and make darkness within, remember never to say you're alone. For you're not alone, for God is within. and your genius is within. So if you don't like the word God, your imagination, your spirit is within. And what need have they of light to see what you're doing? So this is meditation, isn't it? Turn within and find, and just spend time with that, your genius. Spend time with your creativity, with your inner power. Because in there is your love, is your wisdom, is your strength, is your confidence, all of that. And to draw it out through meditation is not only possible, but necessary. And this is another one. This is one of my favorite. There's so much in Epictetus that I love. You like these? Or is it just me? Well, I'm celebrating. I don't care what you think. So this one I love a lot. He says, remember you ought to behave in life as you would at a banquet. As something is being passed around, it comes to you. Stretch out your hand, take a portion of it politely. It passes on. Do not detain it. So a dish comes around. You don't strain. Oh, pass. You wait till it comes to you. Take a little bit. Let it go on. Or it has not come to you yet. Do not project your desire to meet it. Like that. But wait till it comes in front of you. So act towards children, towards wife, towards office, towards wealth. What's he saying? What? Patience, yes. Be relaxed. Be patient. But also, when it's there, take it. A Hindu aphorism goes that life is like a river, and you should, when things come up the river to you, you can gracefully take them, and when things disappear down the river, let them go. So it's like that, not being a struggle with it. So take the dish and let it pass on, and let take the next one, like that. So this is the Stoic vision. You like? Beautiful, isn't it? I think we get a sense of what it was about, and it's very relevant to our inner space. It's very similar to Bhagwan Nityananda's statement, Bhavana Rakho. Keep the feeling. Keep the clear space of good feeling within. It's a full-time job, believe me, to stay in that space. And the great beings have found that space, cultivated that space, and remain in that space. And that's why we say they're enlightened or realized beings. They stay in that space. They don't let things take them off their center. Certainly not for a long period. They might have a bit of a thing, and then they use their insight to bring them back into that space. And that capacity is within every one of us. And you can see how Epictetus, he might be mystifying to the professors of philosophy, but to us he's just like one of us, isn't he? He's like a yogi, a great being, very familiar. I could translate this, and you would think that Aurobindo or Baba Muktananda was saying these things. So let's meditate a little. And it just shows the wonder of consciousness, that the whole universe is moving us towards the truth. And the whole universe and everything that happens to us is moving us towards knowing our own self. And whatever happens, we react this way, we react that way, we go through bad trips, we get ourselves bent out of shape, we become confused, we become miserable. But it's all to show us that there's a better way, to teach us how to go towards that space, that clear space of good feeling, which is who we really are and what's our real birthright. So let's meditate. And that's our goal. It's that place within of great serenity and great joy, great love, great contentment. Yes, we're discontented and we complain and we're straining, but behind that there's a place of contentment and acceptance and love and kindness. And that's the place we meditate on, that's the place we find. And What the sages say is that is who we really are underneath all the wrong movements. So for 10 minutes, let's meditate on that place, on the place of the self within. And once again, with great respect and love, I welcome you all with all my heart. Satguru Nath, Maharaj Ki Jai. Let's meditate.